Welcome to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast, presented by 13 Fishing Canada. Make your own luck. We're here to scratch that angling itch and talk everything fishing. Join us as we sit down with special guests from across the industry. Now, here's your hosts, Brandon Cater and Logan Lewis.
What is going on, everyone? Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast. This is episode 59, part 2 with Brett and Dan. I'm your co-host Logan Lewis here. We hope you guys enjoyed part 1 there, because we got part 2 coming up. Kind of transition away from the Tazen talk and kind of talk about more about what Dan and Brett have going on other than Tazen. So I think you guys will enjoy this one as well. About another hour here, so definitely some good listening time there. But not too much has gone on in real life, I guess, since the last episode. The only thing was, I did get to fish the Pro-Am at the last Mountain Fall Walleye Classic, and that was pretty sweet. Big thanks to Mike and Lee for taking me in. I showed up there the night before, stayed at their place, had supper with them and everything. Really awesome time. They taught me a ton of stuff. Had a lot of fun in the boat as well, in what may as well have been an ocean with some huge waves out there. I don't think most guys would be fishing that day normally if it wasn't for the Pro-Am there. So definitely a big thanks to those guys. And I guess another thing too, kind of heading into the sponsors here, I picked up a couple of the Omen Gold trolling rods there from 13, and they seem pretty sweet. Got to use them a little bit here, but definitely looking forward to putting some more time in with those. But like I said, heading into the sponsors here, big thank you to presenting sponsor 13 Fishing. They've been with us since day one here. Huge discounts there that they have on the website, 15% off. Go out there, get ready for fall fishing, get ready for early ice. We're approaching that time. So be sure to check out their website and save on all their brands. Next up, I'd like to thank the Saskatchewan Wildlife Federation. Once again, they've also been on since day one, and that's been huge for us. You can get yourself a membership there. $20-$25, lots of great things that come along with that membership. And be sure to be continuing to enter those Master Angler fish. I know that's something that they've been working on, and I've been seeing lots of people with certificates and whatnot from the fish they've been entering. So if you do manage to hook into one of those big fish, be sure to enter it on the Master Angler program and get your little reward for that there. So other than that, I think we'll have a quick word here from Lucky Bastard Distillers, and then we'll hop right into the episode.
There are certain moments in life that really stick with you. This is definitely one of them. The thrill of the dill, my friends, is not a myth. Prohibition is over, Saskatchewan. Ask about LB's legendary Birmingham's Dill Pickle Vodka. After all, it's not a party until someone pulls out the pickle. Tours and tastings available. Call or stop by 814 47th Street East. And tonight, why not mix your Caesar with some Lucky Bastard? It's the one with the pickle in it.
No, that's the big thing. I guess this is what happens when you get three guys together who do podcasts and shows. It's already been an hour, but this could probably, if you guys are good to keep going, this would probably be a two-parter. I'm thinking, because we've hammered Taz in here. Obviously, I'm sure there's going to be some people signing up already wanting to go fishing, whether they're watching Taz and TV. I'm sure that helps huge, like you said, in the States. But I guess for part two here, we can kind of transition a bit to some of the other things you guys are doing. The one thing I was kind of interested in, we talked about it before the episode there, is kind of how Midwest fishing compares to some of the fishing you've done in Canada. Cause like you guys said, you've been all over the place. Kind of what do you guys kind of notice some of the similarities, some of the differences?
Canada's cheating. It's Canada's cheating. You know, you guys just don't have the pressure we have here in the States, and Minnesota, especially. Minnesota, we're fortunate, you know, land of 10,000 lakes. It's what, 11,000, blah, blah, blah. We have a lot of lakes, but we have a lot of pressure. Yeah. We have a lot of people. We have the Twin Cities. A lot of people travel around, and the lakes that are good for a reason. And people know that. Like a Lake of the Woods, that they figure in a given ice season, they have a million angling hours on Lake of the Woods. And
2 million.
2 million, sorry.
2.5 this year.
Yeah, it's insane.
That's crazy.
Like, to have that many people on that lake, and granted, it's a giant lake, right? So it can sustain that pressure. But even so, you have world-class fishing in the States, but you go to you slip into Canada or wherever, some of these fly-in lakes, it's just, it's unbelievable. It's a whole different world. And we, I love fishing down here. And I think I like it because there is a challenge to it. There's something fun about that. I joke with people that I like getting my butt kicked fishing. I'll go to these lakes that it can be really good, high risk, high reward, but it's so much fun to just go to Canada and just catch a bunch of fish. And granted, we see our challenges there too, right? We fish Tobin quite a bit now, and we can have tough days on that lake, and it sees pressure. And I think there's a translation there. You see more pressure, you see tougher fishing, even though there's obviously still giant walleyes in Tobin and a lot of them, but it's still just a tougher game.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess this will be the part two episode, so it'll probably be out after, but I've never fished Tobin, but I'm fishing the Vanity this year. I might just be donating $1,000, but it should be pretty sweet.
I want to do that.
So I'll maybe have to talk to you guys.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for a couple of years now. Trevor and Barry fish it, and they've been trying to get me and to come up and do it, or maybe me and Dan to come up and do it. It's a big tournament.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and I've only ever fished one. I'm fishing the Last Mountain Pro Am for the Fall Walleye Classic. That's on the 6th of September, so that'll kind of learn from guys. I've only ever fished one tournament, that's on Buffalo Pound, my home lake, and so it'll be good to learn from some people that have actually done it. But yeah, it'll probably be after this second part comes up, but I'll be up there trying to fish it. I think I'm stoked, jacked. One of the guys that I fished with, he asked me, his partner wasn't able to make it, and I was like, of course. I was like, I've never fished it. And he's like, neither have I. I'm like, great.
this is perfect.
Yeah, but obviously walleye or walleye, just get to know the lake, gonna go up there pre-fish, stuff like that, and just get to be around all that, the atmosphere. It's gonna be incredible because it's like 140 160 boats, something like that. Like, it'll be nuts. But
and it's river fishing, like, so if you river fish for walleyes, that's kind of the style of fishing you're probably going to be doing up there.
Yeah, because that's the river section there. So I think it'll be definitely a huge learning curve, but it'll be, even if it's last place, I'm like, still, it'll be a good time, I think. So
yeah,
exactly. But yeah, I guess for you, Brett, what do you kind of notice here, getting, now that you've been up in Canada for a long time too, like, what's kind of the same thing as what Dan was saying?
Yeah, I've been saying it's cheating up there for a long time, you know, and it's all about pressure. You know, we've got good fishing here, and, you know, you get a bite that comes and goes, and you try to keep it a secret, and it's harder to keep some of those bite secrets in the States just because of the angling pressure, particularly in Minnesota. We got a lot of lakes and a lot of anglers. You know, the difference is also going to be in the adventure. You know, a lot of, and when we talk about philosophies, we talked about this previously, the mindset of people going to Canada used to be to fill a limit, fill a cooler, meat run, let's bring as many fish back home as possible. And maybe for me, because I've had the chance to do it a lot, it's become so much more about the adventure. And obviously the fishing is the main part of the adventure. I want to fish. I want to catch nice fish and lots of them. But just the entire aspect to it, to go someplace cool like northern Saskatchewan, it's really scenic, it's very remote, you got the float plane ride in, you catch a bunch of fish, you get to hang out with some really cool people in a cool place. You get so much more of that. I mean, there's some wild places, like Minnesota's got the Boundary Waters up in the northeast part, and it's very Canadian. It's very Canadian Shield. It honestly looks a lot like northern Saskatchewan in places. And it's very remote, and it's wilderness, so it's a lot of primitive camping and canoeing and no motors. So you get that sense of adventure there. So we have some of that here, but you know, those places are few and far between here as compared to up there. You just get a little bit more wild, I think, when you go up to Canada. So we can have good fishing here, and we have some pretty decent fishing right here where we live, of course. So if we want some fish to eat, and we did fish a tournament here the other day, and we got the second biggest walleye in the tournament, which was like 27 3/4. So we've got some decent fishing around here, but you don't, like, I didn't know this, a 50-inch pike was a thing. I had no idea, you know, and in Minnesota, I had to go to the Canadian side of Lake of the Woods to catch my first 40-inch pike here in Minnesota. And we've got them, and our home lake has got some low 40-inch fish too. We just don't usually target them here very often, but I caught a 50 at Tazan a couple of years ago, and I freaked. Like, I'd seen a couple get caught, but to be able to actually catch one and not even realize that they existed, you know, a few years earlier.
Oh, for sure.
Is pretty wild. So, Canada fishing just pretty much has it all. Like the adventure, the opportunity for quantity of fish, and the opportunity to catch, you know, an absolute fish of a lifetime. It's different.
Yeah. Just to put it in perspective for the pike fishing, the Minnesota catch and release state record is like 46 inches.
Oh, okay.
So put that in perspective to Canada fishing. Like the 46 is, some guys, I know probably guys that don't take pictures of 46 inch pike in there.
Yeah. 46, mid 40s. Mid-40s is still a picture fish for sure.
You know what I mean.
No. But, yeah.
That's a record in Minnesota, and that's not uncommon in Canada.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's kind of, it's all, like, talked with Mac on the last episode, Mac Mulligan from Baker's. It's like, it's all about managing the expectation. And when I was guiding, I'm like, just because we're the same, basically all Americans. And I'm like, what is this love for these pike when you have these beautiful huge lake trout here and that's just pike. All I want is pike. And I'm like, I get it, because like what I tell people now when they talk about it, I'm like, well, they don't really have lake trout down there as much, right? In most of these places that these people are coming from. So they can't take it home and be like, check out this lake trout, because people are like, I don't know if that's big, if it's small, if it's whatever. Whereas a pike, everyone that they're catching is maybe like a 24 inch or something, and then they come home and show them a 45 and all their friends like, what? What is that guy
bragging,
right? So I get that part of it there, and that's the funny thing. Like week two this year at Lac La Mart, we did 215 pike over 40 inches or something.
I saw that.
Between nine boats, and I'm like, for us it's like, oh yeah, that's a 40, and most people aren't taking pictures with 40s at that point, unless it's like one of the first trips they've done. You get some people up there who've been up there lots, and 45 is like, yeah, that's a good fish, and you're like, you're going to take a picture with it? They're like, I may as well. And I'm like, I'm like, you don't realize you're spoiled.
So spoiled.
Yeah. And very spoiled.
I didn't realize there was, Minnesota's got some decent lake trout lakes. We've got Lake Superior, obviously, where there's some good lake trout. And then northern Minnesota, a lot of guys will fish them through the ice. And there's kind of a long history and tradition of ice fishing lake trout. The Boundary Waters has got some great lake trout lakes. And, but I remember doing an all Canada show in Chicago a few years back and working the Tasman booth, and all these guys around Lake Michigan, they come by and we got a banner with a big lake trout on it. I'm like, oh, I don't want one of them grease balls. What else you guys got in the lake? Like, are you serious? That's a 52-pound fish right there. Yeah. I don't, can I eat it?
Got any salmon?
Yeah. That's what they want. they just lake trout are trash fish on Lake Michigan. They all want salmon. Yeah. And so there's some different perceptions about lake trout around the world. And, you know, that I think that's the one part of our message that we've had to really work on over the years. Because when you think about Tasman or Athabasca or Great Slave, Great Bear, we think about the big lake trout lakes. There's really only a handful of them in that particular part of the world where lake trout fishing is world class like that. You know, you've got a lake in Colorado where they caught that Flaming Gorge, and you've got Superior, and you've got some big lake trout, Fort Peck. You've got some other places where they get nice lake trout, but nothing like what you have in those collection of lakes up there. It's just it's just a completely different ball game, and trying to convince some of those people that they aren't just grease balls, you know, and you get to fish them differently. You know, a lot of those Great Lakes guys are trolling, you know, 12 rods out of the back of the boat, and they're water skiing all those fish in. You don't get to fight them. And when we had one guest jig up a 48 incher.
Wow.
You know, that was probably, estimated, 50, 60 pounds, whatever it was. I can't remember. It was like 48 by 30 or 48 by 29. Mm-hmm. It was a 45 minute fight, and you're fighting this fish vertical the entire time. Like there's no equivalent to that with Great Lakes fishing. There's nothing
like
that.
That's how you ruin your back. You're fighting the bottom basically for about half that fight. Yeah.
Worth it.
I've watched some videos of guys trolling the Great Lakes, and it's as soon as a greaser comes in or whatever, it's just like, get this thing off. It's like the way some walleye fishermen treat pike here. It's like, get this thing off my hook. And I'm like, it's a fish. And it's a good fish lots of the time too. And they just don't want anything to do with it. I'm like, I don't get it.
Well, it's meat runs, right? They're there to catch salmon, to put in the cooler and bring home. You know, that's all it is. And so they're going for fish. They're not, you know, I don't know. I just don't have a lot of interest fishing like that personally. You know, no offense to those guys that do it, but I like jigging. I want to, you know, convince that fish to bite and then fight it, you know, and catch it. So
for sure. And I guess I think that's pretty fair. And like one thing that people in the States maybe don't realize, like you talked about auto charting in the last episode there, most of our lakes aren't mapped. Like everywhere you're going, you're getting your card to auto chart or whatever unit you're using, whatever they call it on the other units. It's like you're going and you're making your own maps. You're not just, you can't go and research a place for a week and be like, I'm going to fish this point at this depth and this one, right? Like you can't really do that as much. Yeah, there's some maps or some websites. I don't know if they use satellites or what, that are kind of close with some stuff, but it's like to actually get the true stuff that you're able to get of some of those maps in the late or in the States or in Ontario, stuff like that. Here in Saskatchewan, lots of Manitoba. I know there's a Manitoba company doing some of the lakes, but like lots of this you're going in blind. And maybe you know the spot, but you don't know the spot on the spot, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of going in blind, like going up to Tazen. There's not going to be Lake Master's chip for that, I don't think, right? Like it's stuff like that. That's like you're going out there blind and you got to figure it out. But that is offset with the caliber of fishing that is there, the lack of pressure, the number of fish, right? So it's kind of give and take a bit, but it would be nice to just be like, I'm going to fish this lake for the first time ever. I've got the whole layout and let's go check it out. Cause some of them, they do have like Last Mountain, there's a Lake Masters or Navionics for it or something. But we were using one that my buddy had and we go to drill a hole in the winter and it's supposed to be 24 feet and we bring up mud. We're like, no, this ain't it.
It's a real dry year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's something that plays into it as well. So,
and we see some of that here too. There's some lakes like the Dakotas have some relatively new lakes. There's some flooding that took place not too long ago. I don't even want to say a year, Brett. You would know how many years ago that was.
The 80s and 90s.
Okay.
Were real wet, and like Devil's Lake grew exponentially, and a lot of the prairie lakes in South Dakota really expanded.
Okay.
So there's a lot of those lakes that used to just be little duck sloughs that are now full of walleyes that some of them have good maps, others don't. And so you're doing the same thing, right? You know, it's okay, well, there should be a little rock pile here or just that's where an old farm was. And
this is a road. This is a ditch.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's some where you go scan and you're like, oh, look, there's farm implements on your side scan right there. And
yeah.
It thinks it's 30 feet and it's 2 feet or whatever. It's fun to go chart, but you're kind of playing with those same things where you don't have a great map on.
Whenever somebody asks me like, well, I'm going to South Dakota, where should I fish? I always tell them just pull up Google Maps and look for where the roads used to be.
Yeah.
And then go troll the road.
That's a good point.
Find road close.
Yeah.
Yeah. Water ahead.
Yeah. It's where the fish are.
That's good. So I guess as far as kind of more what you guys are focused on with the filming and stuff, the world obviously for lots of this stuff as could be good, could be bad, the way TV shows used to be for fishing and hunting, and now it's heavily YouTube based. Obviously you still have some of your fishing and hunting channels. Kind of what do you guys kind of notice that it takes to film a traditional TV hunting show or fishing or hunting TV show or a YouTube show? Because obviously one's a little bit more informal lots of the time. Like, what do you guys kind of notice is the difference? Probably you guys have done both, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah. So I did Northland Outdoors, and that's how I got introduced to Tazen, and that aired on Fox Sports North regionally here. And then we did one season of that, and then I started doing a show called Prairie Sportsman, and that was based on this little tiny, it's the second smallest PBS station in the United States. And we grew that show now to be on 12 PBS stations across 7 states. It airs about 600 times. You can go to any PBS website in the United States and pull up the show. So it's grown quite a bit. And I think the secret of the success that show has had is that we're not just about going out there and catching a limit of fish. We're not just going out there trying to shoot a big buck or shoot a limit of mallards or whatever the case is. We're telling stories, and we're doing a lot of work on the work that goes into those hunting opportunities. So we're funded by money that comes from lottery ticket sales in Minnesota. It's a it's a group of legislators and citizens on a council. It's a LCCMR, the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. And when Minnesota started selling lottery tickets 30 years ago or 20 years ago, whatever it was before you were born, they said there was a constitutional amendment that stated a percentage of all lottery ticket sales will go back into the environment in Minnesota. So our show is funded every 2 years by money in that fund. And the reason we were voted as the number one favorite project funded out of, you know, 200 projects that get funded every year or whatever the case, it's like $70 million every 2 years with a number of projects. We're one of their favorites. And it's because we highlight not just the outdoor opportunities in Minnesota, but the conservation management decisions, the science behind those opportunities. So, you know, Dan and I will go out and catch some fish and film it and maybe do a story on an old guide that's made a living, you know, as an old fishing guide for a number of years. And then our next segment may be why that lake that he guides on has been so successful and what, you know, the DNR has done to maintain the high level of fishing on that particular lake.
Right.
Or we'll talk about new invasive species and what's being done to stop them. So I think that's really set us apart, that we're not just out there as like a, you know, hook and bullet, you know, catching them and killing them type of show.
Which, straight dopamine show.
Yeah. And there's a place for those. And especially on YouTube now, some people, that's all they want. I don't even want slow-mo. I don't want any music. I just want straight killing. Yeah. Just trigger pulling. You know, sometimes it's fun to watch birds fall out of the air. And after you watch it for a little bit, it's just this, you turn on another one, it's the same thing. It's like, all right, you know, how many times can you watch a mallard die, you know, or a big buck? Oh, here he comes. Shh, shh, here he comes. Oh man, oh gosh, it's so great. And then I just walked a big one. I don't know why I got a southern accent when I said that, but
because it's always the guys. It's, I think of the Luke Bryan video. I'm not the biggest Luke Bryan fan. I hope he doesn't listen to the show. If he does, I'm sorry, Luke Bryan. But it's all the memes where it's like me on opening day after I just smoked a button buck, and he's AZ down.
So and some of those are great, and that used to be, you know, you look at some of the shows that are so big. I mean, that's what made them so big and popular. It's just that it got to be so much. And then as philosophies change, it's not about pile pictures. And, you know, like we rarely try to show pile pictures anymore. And I mean, we still like to show the harvest. We still think it's important to show every aspect of a hunt or a fishing trip or show or whatever, but we're not gluttonous about it. Right. Like we're not glorifying a giant pile of, you know, if we shoot 40 geese or something, I mean, we might show the pile, but for the most part, we're showing the hunt. We're showing the excitement of it. We're showing the calling. We're showing what we're doing. We're talking about why goose hunting is so good. But we're not like, oh, hell yeah, we just smoked a pile of geese, shot him right in the face. Like that.
Yeah.
That's what's wrong with social media these days, you know, I think, in a lot of ways. It's glorifying the over harvest, and our resources just won't be able to sustain that type. Yeah. So we try to focus on the story and the tradition and the conservation and promoting how to sustain the tradition of the outdoors so that future generations can enjoy it.
Right. And I think, Dan, you should know Luke Bryan responds to all of our stories, so he might not now. No, that's okay. If he did listen, we didn't know, so no harm, no foul. But yeah, and I think what you're saying there, like with the piles of birds or whatever, because before it would be like, you used to watch one of those shows, and it's like, we had a three-day hunt, and then it's like, boom, picture, and it's all the piles, right? And that's kind of the big thing. Whereas now, maybe you just show the guys walking away carrying the birds or something like that, right? Like, it's not, because that gets into the wrong people's hands, and the way things get blown out of proportion, it's like, that's just giving people ammo to kind of go against you too. And like you said, that's not what it's about. Just like we talked about, it's not about filling the stringer anymore. We talked about that in the last episode.
Managing expectations.
Yeah, exactly. Like I go out, like I'm newer into it, and I'm in Saskatchewan, which is a great place for waterfowl, but around me it's been a lot drier lately and stuff like that, and we're losing lots of our potholes. But like I'm going out and just being new to it and doing it myself for lots of it, it's like I'm jacked when I get like five birds, and that's just me knowing how much time and effort goes into it to learn it. But like I've finally this year we had a couple limits on ducks, and I'm like, man, this is insane. But then man, I'm also up till two cleaning birds or whatever, stuff like that. And it's kind of like you said about managing the expectations. And if you get some kid who's on TikTok or YouTube watching these videos, and it's like they go and every show they've got a pile of birds, it's like, well, that's not always the case. And but that's all anyone sees. And I think that's the big thing with YouTube you kind of fit usually into a genre, right? It's either I'm going out and I'm slamming 100 bass in this video, or I'm gonna just teach you about bass. It kind of doesn't seem to, lots of the time they don't really intermingle, whereas I find, like you talked about with these shows, there's a lot more that goes into the local areas. There's a lot more that goes into, this is how we're going to do it, this is us doing it, and this is kind of why it worked out. Like, you get more of a full story, I find, with the shows. And I think you pointed that out quite well.
And that's partly just the fault of YouTube and the way it works. Like, you do it for views, right? And if you don't get views, and then you get out of the algorithm, and then nobody watches your stuff. So you got to find ways to get people to watch, and people's attention spans are so short nowadays that you have to try to grab them. And I remember I was guiding snow geese, I don't know, it was like 14, 15, 16, 17. So YouTube had been around, but it was really starting to explode with hunting videos. And these snow goose hunting videos, like the triple digit days, were really starting to get popular on YouTube. Yeah. And there were a couple of guys that were doing it they were doing it consistently if you watched them on YouTube. And, you know, really, aside from up in Saskatchewan, you know, if you hunt like the Dakotas, whether Arkansas, Nebraska, Missouri, or the Dakotas, like your average day, like if you shoot over 10 birds, you're having a pretty good day. If you're chasing a feed, you might shoot a few more, or you might strike out completely. But if you're hunting like a migrator spread, you shoot 10 to 20 birds, that's probably a pretty good average day. Some days you might shoot 40. Those rare days, you might shoot 100, but those are usually on feeds. And most guides are running migrator spreads. So we'd have these clients come in, they'd be like, oh man, I just can't wait till we hit 100 today. And we'd look at, you know, me and the other guy would look at each other like, oh gosh, this kid's been watching YouTube too much, you know. And it's all about managing those expectations, whether you're a fishing guide or hunting guide. But YouTube has kind of social media, Facebook pile pictures and YouTube 100 bird snow goose videos have ruined it for a lot of people.
Yeah. No, that's totally fair. And I think when you talk about snow geese might fall into a bit different one as far as managing the resource. Mm-hmm. I don't know as much, but from what I've heard with their numbers and stuff, that could be a bit different. But when you're talking about ducks and other geese and stuff, it's like, well, when you're managing the resource, do you really need, if you got four guys going out, do you really need a four-man limit? Like, how full is your freezer already, right? Like, it's kind of, you could have it, but then that's a lot of work. Whereas if you're going out, you said you had 10 geese or something like that between a couple of guys, that's pretty good amount of food still, right? As far as what you're going for, the main reason that you're going out there for harvest, right? Can't catch and release with hunting. So it's like, for that kind of stuff, I think that fits more into that living off of it or whatever, just the harvest part, right? And where you start to, like, you hear guys that are doing those full limits all the time, it's like, we don't know what to do with the meat. And it's like, well, we're starting to stray away from the purpose with some of that stuff too, right?
You know, and I always say that a good guide will get a repeat client on days that they don't shoot any birds or catch any fish. You know, it's when it comes to guiding, it's all about showing the client a good time. And some of those guys, you know, whether it's fishing or hunting, so many times clients come in and expect limits. And you either have to establish that up front when they book the hunt. You know, what are your expectations? Are you coming in here to expect to shoot 100 snow geese or catch a 50-pound lake trout? Or what are your expectations? And you try to manage them. And you know, if it's somebody trying to say, well, I just want to kill, man. I just want to shoot limits. It's like, well, we're going to try. And we'll try to get you what you can legally shoot. And nowadays, in the States, being it's federal migratory regulations, they're starting to clamp down more and more on, hey, you got this many birds that you can shoot. Maybe a group of eight guys, but once you hit your five bird limit, you're done.
Right.
And, you know, the whole party hunting thing, which I don't necessarily agree with that rule that a, you know, a group of eight guys can't shoot their 40 birds or whatever, their limit. Yeah. But regardless, that's the way it is. So it was tough a couple of times saying, well, who shot that bird? And sometimes you get guys that raise, oh, I shot that one. And you know, there's some wee birds where, you know, eight guys shot at one goose and you have no idea who killed
that
it, you know,
is pulverized.
Or five of them shot it. So somebody's got to claim it. And sometimes guys don't want to claim it, or they shoot their five and like, no, I didn't shoot that one. Cause they know we're going to tell them to stop shooting. And that can get tricky at times. So it's all about having that mindset going in, whether you're guiding or just hunting, that it's not about limits anymore. You know, it's about, you want to pull the trigger. It's always more fun when you pull the trigger or catch fish, but a definition of success doesn't mean a limit in the box, or, you know, a limit in the back of the truck.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's totally true. And it is that awkward conversation. And that's kind of one thing Zach has kind of taught me too, is you're the guide. You just got to be stern, and I'm the boss basically, and this is what it is. Because you got lots of guys like, oh, well, you don't really need to follow that rule or whatever, stuff like that. It's like, no, this is what it is, and if you don't like it, get out of my boat, get out of my blind. Like, it's kind of, you're going to follow these rules, and that's how it's going to be. And it's, I don't know if it's a money thing or just a, come on, like, this one time. Well, all clients are pretty well the same lots of the time as far as what is expected or kind of how they act. And they maybe don't realize that. Like, it's you're not the first one to ask me, you're not the last one to ask me to do X, right? Like, so I think people don't realize that. But it's good when you have people who are ethical about it as far as guides, and they're like, no, this is how it is going to be. And usually from stuff that I've heard, they actually kind of tend to almost respect you more after that once they understand. Right. Rather than just you being pushed over, because you get pushed over once, they're just going to keep doing it. So,
and some of those big money guys aren't used to being told no, and they figure they're spending the money, or they'll offer up more money to do whatever they want. And it's hard. It can be hard, especially you're out in the middle of nowhere and you got a real pushy client that's got a lot of money. And you know, it could be one of those situations where, especially if you're a new guide at a camp, you don't want to create a rift between a big money guy and you know, somebody that could bring that camp a lot of money and a lot of business. It can be a tough deal having to put up with somebody like that and tell them no, we're not going to do that. Yeah. we had one group, I'm going back to snow goose guiding again, but we had one group, and one of the guys in the group just wanted to shoot every single bird that flew over. And you know, in the spring when we were guiding, you can only shoot snow geese. But this guy wanted to shoot every blackbird, you know, and we can shoot crows, I guess, during part of that, the crow season is open, but he wanted to shoot, like, there'd be, you know, robins flying over. He's like, oh, can I shoot that one?
Yeah.
No. Why?
Yeah. He just wanted to kill.
He just wanted to kill.
He was blood hungry. Yeah. No, that's fair. Yeah. You always, it's clients will surprise you. For people that haven't guided, it's some of the stuff you hear, it's like, what? Like, obviously you don't understand what's going on, but no, that's totally fair. And I guess kind of transitioning from that with the shows and stuff, you guys have, were you talking about four different channels before we started recording? You got four going on. What are those? I guess one through four.
Yeah. So we start from, should we start oldest to newest or newest to oldest? We can talk about Tazen. We talked about Tazen the last episode and a little bit here. So Tazen Lake Lodge, that's one of them. We go up for at least a couple weeks every summer now and film there. And then we've got Prairie Sportsman, which we talked about, which is that TV show, but also on YouTube. So if you're not in the PBS range or you're in Canada, wherever you're at, you can go look at Prairie Sportsman on YouTube. Sporting Journal Radio, which is our podcast and radio show. It's on 30 stations around the Midwest, but it's also recorded, much like this one, on YouTube, or you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts. And then our newest one is Fish Hunt Forever. We're basically all of our other hunting and fishing adventures that we've filmed that don't go to Prairie Sportsman or aren't at Tazen, I'll go to Fish Hunt Forever. So we've got a new video from Alaska. We did a duck hunt in Kodiak coming up. We've got a lot of fishing from our Midwest. We went out to Niagara River, did some fishing in February. So stuff from all over. We'll have some stuff from Tobin, I'm sure, from this fall. Another couple of Saskatchewan duck hunts probably coming up. So quite a bit on that channel. It's hunting, fishing, whatever we're up to, it kind of goes there. How to, a lot of eye candy, we try to get that mix of kind of what we were talking about with, it's either you catch 100 bass or you are showing how you caught 100 bass. We want to get both of that, right?
Yeah.
Because there's value in education, but there's also fun in just watching some fish come in the boat. So we're trying to find that gap or find that middle ground, really. And right. that's what that channel is kind of all about. And keeping that conservation aspect to it, too, as well, right? It's always more than hunting and fishing. There's something more besides setting the hook on a walleye and putting in the boat. There's something behind that. There's
right.
there's an aspect to that that's always going to be there, and we want to find that aspect too. If it's not, that's a big thing of Prairie Sportsman. But since we can't film that show outside of Minnesota, if we go to Canada, there's conservation in Canada that we want to yep. show, or wherever, across country, across the world, really. It's been a lot of fun to film that channel.
So we came up with this mantra a couple of years ago that I fish, I hunt, and always will. And the meaning behind that is I'm not going to apologize for being a hunter. I'm not going to apologize mm-hmm. for eating deer. I'm not going to apologize for eating fish and promoting that lifestyle. But I'm also going to be a proponent of being sustainable and making sure that we have fish and deer and ducks and pheasants for future generations. So it's all about yeah. promoting the outdoor lifestyle and doing it in a way that will continue that for generations to come. And so it has a lot of that Prairie Sportsman philosophy, like Dan said, that conservation angle, only, you know, having it on YouTube and creating this YouTube channel that allowed us to put content that we couldn't fit on any of the other channels. Although we do have a Tazen Lake video. We did put a Tazen Lake video up there too. So a lot of stuff that
we got so much stuff from Tazen. We couldn't fit into a season of Tazen TV. So we had to put it somewhere because it's too good to just sit on a hard drive.
Yeah.
In my our opinion.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the thing that's kind of cool is you have all those different places to put stuff. If it doesn't fit in one channel, then at least it can go to the next and kind of stuff like that, right? All the hard drives?
There's the hard drives I'm working with right now. That's my RAID. Right, what?
How big are each one of those?
5 terabytes.
Oh, wow. So who's stuck with the editing, or do you both do that?
We split it.
Oh, okay.
We've got it pretty good. So, and Brett's a good boss this way, where we go somewhere and it's not just me filming and him hosting or him shooting or fishing. And it's we take turns. We're good about it. And granted, I bought a boat partly for this reason, so I don't have to film in the boat because someone's got to run.
Yeah, so that's someone's got to drive the boat.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to buy a boat, and then Dan bought one, so I didn't need to.
Yes, it's perfect. Yeah. It works out perfectly. But no, we're good about splitting that. And, you know, we shoot into a flock of birds, we'll switch off or whatever it might be. And, you know, like in Alaska, we split it where, you know, we had a list of birds we wanted to hunt: harlequins, scoters, longtails, Barrow's goldenine. So, you know, I shot a harlequin. Okay, it's Brett's turn to hunt this day. And then he got one. And then the next day, okay, he shot some scoters. Now it's my turn to shoot. So right. we're good about splitting it up. And then we get home. We've got a whiteboard sitting over my shoulder that has all of our stuff on it. And okay, well, I'll take this one. You take that one. So while he might be the boss, he's pretty good about splitting us.
Well, I mean, especially for going to some of these cool places, you know, I don't need to be the only one doing all the fun parts, right? If somebody, mm-hmm. if we're going to travel to, especially that first trip to Tazen, it was a 7-day trip and we hired this freelance videographer to come film the show, and he loves to hunt and fish, right? He's a cool guy. And I'm like, all right, you know, so I was negotiating a day rate, you know, like how, you know, what are you going to charge us to film every day? And he goes, well, it's a 7-day trip with 2 days of travel. So it's a 9-day trip for me. You know, so the cost of hiring a camera guy for 9 days is pretty steep. He's like, well, if you let me fish a little bit, I'll give you a break on the rate. I'm like, oh, dude, of course. Absolutely. Let's go. We're going to Tazen Lake. You know, I mean, he lives in southeast Minnesota. I live in southwest Minnesota. This is a big deal going up to northern Saskatchewan.
You're going to get to fish anyways, but if you say that, well, then take
yeah. it. So, use it. So I called my boss at Northland Outdoors, and I said, hey, you know, he says if he can fish a little bit, well, he'll give us a break on the rate, and they wouldn't let him. They said,
oh, really?
What if you guys catch the world record, you know, while he's fishing? Like, yeah, well, somebody's going to film it. Like, first of all, I know how to run a camera. So if he's fishing, I'll probably film him, yeah. you know, like, or whatever, or if somebody else catches it, he's going to put the rod down. They would not let him. So he came up for 7 days and didn't buy a license, or I mean, he might have bought a license, but he didn't fish. at mm-hmm. one of the best places in the world to fish for 7 days. And that always stuck with me. So even for Prairie Sportsman, we got a couple of guys that shoot for us that don't fish very much. They're, you know, they're just kind of learning about it. And every time we go, especially if the fishing is good, like if we're pounding fish, I'm like, all right, dude, give me the camera. You need to catch one of these. Like, and we put it in the show a lot of times. We, you know, hey, the camera guy gets to fish now a little bit. And that's it's just a philosophy I've always had, especially if we're in a cool place or if the fishing or the hunting is really good, everybody should get a chance to do it.
Oh, for sure. And if I say he did catch the world record, I'd be like, this is like viral potential. The fact that the cameraman came,
right?
He fished for 10% of the time everyone else did, and he's hardly ever fished and he catches the world record. You're going to be right there beside him. It's not like it's an issue. If anything, to me, that's even more of a story rather than regular host of the show catches it, right? Like, I mean.
Well, let's just say the management at that show made a lot of questionable decisions. That's all I'll say about it. I still got some friends that work there, but there's some people that. Yeah. Anyway.
No, that's.
The best thing that ever happened for my career was them firing you.
Yeah.
There you go. Right. Yeah. No, I think that's pretty sweet. And I for the editing, it's good that you guys take turns with or split it kind of thing. Cause like I would love to do way more videos if I just got to learn how to edit better, but it's just like the editing time. People don't realize like you're spending a day on the lake, but I know everyone says something different, but if you're doing say an 8 hour day on the lake, what are you looking at editing?
I mean, it depends like on how much footage we got, like how good it was and what our story is. But you know, like I've been working on this Alaska film, and granted it's a film, it's going to be about an hour long, but, and it was a 15-day trip, but I've been working on it since June.
Yeah.
But some of the shorter videos like that new fishing video that came out this week probably took you, I don't know, a few days.
Yeah. A couple days. Like that's like a Prairie Sportsman segment might be a week, I would say. And again, yeah, it all depends on what we have, how it comes down to how well we shot it. Mm-hmm. Did we shoot to edit, or did we just shoot it? Now we got to piece something together. So it all comes down to that. But for the most part, we're pretty good about it these days.
And it depends. Like we shot a video for Cast King that they played at their booth at ICAST, and it ended up being a 3-minute video, and they didn't even run the audio in the booth, but we put audio to it anyway. We filmed it in one day, but I tallied up the hours, and I was close to about 40 hours of editing on a 3-minute video. You know, and trying to make it look really nice for ICAST. So some projects there, I was a radio guy that worked with audio for a year. Like I had a career in radio before I did any of this, and I got really good at working with audio. And then I was always kind of into photography a little bit. And then I bought a magazine called Minnesota Sporting Journal, which is a hunting and fishing magazine. And I went out and bought expensive cameras, and I got into still photography, wildlife photography, just dove in head first, got really into that. And I avoided video for the longest time just because of the time it takes to edit video. Right, and now, I mean, literally that's all we do all day is sit around and edit video pretty much every day. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing. Like for me, like I said, self-taught with the audio editing. I'm sure there's a lot better ways to do it, but I can, if like you said, the way you film it, the way we record it, I can, if it's an hour long episode, I can bang that out in like an hour and a half sometimes because things just went smooth. But as soon as you start adding the video, and like you said, if you're going commercial grade, like for the one at ICAST, you're probably spending a lot more time on that than one that's more of a YouTube video or whatever, right? As far as the color grading, all the stuff you can get into, it's like, it all depends on what the final purpose of it is too, but it's just nuts how there's enough time spent on editing just audio, and now you want to add video and you got to deal with all that. It's like, oh, you try and hire someone potentially too as an editor, but it's like, if they're not into the outdoors, they're not into the fishing or the hunting, they don't understand what to look for also, right?
And a lot of times if they weren't there or the one shooting it, you almost spend just as much time explaining to them or writing the episode for them to edit to, that sometimes it's easier to do it yourself.
Yeah. By the time you put in all that work, it's like, I should have just been doing it while I was editing this and it would have been done kind of thing. Right. Yeah. No, that's fair. And that's where, I mean, you hear lots of YouTube channels and stuff getting editors, but it's like anyone can edit a vlog of a day that you drove around downtown LA in a nice car, right? Like that's not much of a storyline. That's just dopamine being pushed to someone, right? It's kind of different when you actually got to tell a story and make it look nice and stuff like that, right? So no, totally understand that. And maybe I'll get into the video editing eventually. Still young enough, I guess, right?
It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and that's, I've got the new laptop for that. It's more powerful. I built a computer and was editing on there, but this laptop is now, instead of being in a basement bedroom editing, I can be out on the deck editing or something like that. So maybe that'll help me too. Maybe some sun will help rather than a deep, dark basement to edit in.
Darkest room you can find is the best place.
Yeah, Dan likes having all the lights off. Lights. Yeah.
Lights. Well, I don't know.
And changing. You know, I did another podcast here recently and he was telling me he uses a lot of AI to edit his podcast, video podcast, same kind of deal. Okay. And a lot of stuff that I'd never, you know, I'm kind of anti-AI right now, so I don't even want to think about it. But like for getting some shorts and reels and stuff, he's got some software that the AI will literally make the reel. It'll try to pick out the most viral moments of the interview and create reels for you, 60-second reels. Right. So it's changing.
This world is changing so fast. Yeah. You know, I graduated college in 2021, so couple of years ago, and I went to school for all this stuff, right? I've learned so much more in the 2 years outside of college just doing this and diving in and finding stuff on YouTube.
Right? Why am I paying you? I should just be charging you tuition for all this. Why am I paying you to do this?
Okay, hold on. You're... I learned so much more getting paid to do this when I went.
Yeah.
And granted, I loved college. I don't regret going to medical, especially where I was. Met a lot of great people in the fishing industry. But I paid a lot of money to learn a lot of stuff, but I've learned way more just being in the job.
And I wouldn't have hired you without that degree, so it's a good thing that...
Yeah. Well, you're just paying for a title, basically.
If you ever irritate me, I could just leave and go find a different job.
I irritate you every day. Why haven't you left yet?
There's a couple straws that you haven't broken yet.
Yeah.
It's a good gig, that's why.
It is.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Like when you talk about the AI, I know like I got the new laptop and doing some shorts and stuff for the podcast page. And there's just on the phone, it's a captions app. And some of the AI, like, it's obviously got a lot better, even in the last year, you can see a difference. But like when there's this one thing that would put all the podcasts into transcript form. And I was going to take that and kind of try and put it into blogs for our website. If you go check the blogs, nothing's happened in like a year and a half. So obviously that didn't work out. But like I was trying to do that, but then I was spending more time fixing this transcript that the AI had thought it was hearing. And I'm like, I this is just even more work. I got these transcripts done and now it's like, this isn't even right. But then this captions app that I've been using that Brandon put me onto, it's like, it comes in there. It's pretty good about knowing what, even with the fishing stuff, like the one I did with Mac was talking about jigging lake trout and it came up with a title, an Instagram caption and then a description as well. And I'm like, I didn't even know what was doing this. All I wanted was the captions to go up because apparently everyone likes to just read stuff now. But even there, it picks out important words and stuff and makes them bigger with the captions. And I'm like, I didn't even know I was getting half of this stuff. And some of it's pretty good. The one it was talking about dead baits for lake trout as opposed to jigging. And the captions are talking about baiting for bass. And I'm like, this has nothing to do with what this clip is. But it's still kind of is sweet to get those ideas. And I didn't even know about the AI for editing the actual clips. Like this platform we use does try and pull some good captures as far as the screen and stuff like that. And I think it maybe will come up with some like clips, but it's tough when it's only 30 to 60 seconds. Cause some of these clips I'm taking, you'll talk about jigging lake trout. You'll use the first 10 seconds. Then you go on a tangent for a minute and then you come back to what you're talking about. Well, it doesn't really pick that up lots of the time. And so you still have to go and do that. But I mean, every little bit of help is nice when you're spending all that time, right? So
captions app, you say. Okay, I'll write that down.
Captions.
It's so funny because there's so many, you know, like this Riverside that you're using now. I mean, we've been doing a video podcast now. Well, it started during COVID, same kind of deal. And I'd heard of Riverside before and some of these other ones, but we started Ecamm because of somebody mm-hmm. that I knew was using Ecamm for a video streaming type show. And so we've just been doing that now. And there's so many different software options out there and more popping up all the time and all these different editing options. You know, I've been part of the Adobe family since before it was Adobe, you know, using Audition and Premiere and Photoshop and Lightroom and all that, I could probably save a lot of money going to some of these new apps that are out there
before it costs you a kidney every
year. But I'm so ingrained in the Adobe world and everything. And I run all Mac, so Macs and iPhones. So everything is tied in and I'm on the cloud and all that. It'd be hard to do anything different. But, and honestly, Adobe is getting into the AI world now too. So they're kind of evolving with the times, thankfully. But it's crazy for people, you know, trying to get into it now. It's kind of mind blowing all the options to do it out there.
It's like when you're trying to shoot at some birds and you end up flock shooting and you hit nothing. Like there's too many options. Right. It's ridiculous. I'm sure some of the fishing people are like, what are they even talking about? But film and audio, whatever, people will enjoy it. Like I just switched to DaVinci Resolve, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's been, cause I was using I was using Shotcut, which worked for what I needed it for, but it was like, it crashed, stuff like that. It wasn't as good, but going to DaVinci, which is, I'm using the free version, and it's like, I've got more options than I need or know what to do with here. And I'm like, because everyone, Adobe is the standard, I would say, right?
As Adobe far as and Final all Cut, stuff. And then DaVinci. Yeah. Those are probably the top three.
Like, you always hear those, the YouTubers are talking about those, and it's like, well, I want to use that. And then you're like, well, this other one is free and looks pretty good for what I'm doing as opposed to paying for it. But when you're doing it professionally, like you guys are, it makes sense, right? And you need some write-offs as well, too.
Well, yeah, so. There's that. You know, and some of that stuff, I mean, people are making movies, you know, on Final Cut and Adobe and using some, there's a lot of stuff in there that I couldn't tell you how to use, too. I mean,
For sure.
It's definitely commercial grade, but.
For sure. Yeah, that's totally fair. And I guess it's kept you guys for 2 hours now. This is maybe verging on the longest recording that we've had, but it checks out, like I said, with the three of us and what we do. So I guess kind of what do you guys got coming up here in the near future? I know you guys talked about some things you had going on before we started recording. And then after that, we'll get into a couple of rapid fire before we wrap things up.
Well, as a matter of fact, we're heading right back up to your neck of the woods. We're going to be in Saskatchewan chasing some waterfowl around, maybe doing a little bit of fishing while we're up there. And actually, most of September, we're on the road. So we're part of this group called AGLOW. It's the Association of Great Lakes Outdoor Writers. You might see AGLOW on social media, or theoutdoorfeed.org is a good website for people that just want to, you know, get a daily dose of outdoor content out there, from podcasts, TV shows, product news, fishing tips, things like that. And it's all powered by members of this writers organization. And it's a writers organization, but it's full of podcasters and YouTubers. It's evolved to create, it's involved to include all the content creators that are out there in today's digital landscape. And each year they have an annual conference. And we've become the communications arm of the organization. It's over 500 members, and that's from brands like, you know, say Live Target, to tourism destinations like Lake of the Woods, to content creators like ourselves, and also conservation organizations like Pheasants Forever. And basically, it's a group that gets together and networks with each other so that you can, you know, like we've gotten different sponsors for our podcast through membership of the organization. We've got a lot of story ideas. So throughout the year, we'll do different writers camps or media camps. With that Niagara River trip that Dan talked about to Niagara Falls, we fish Niagara River for steelhead and walleyes and brown trout and lake trout. It was wild. And it was lake trout in a river in like 9 feet of water. And we were jigging and catching like 10, 15 pound lake trout. It was,
oh, nice.
It was fun. And that was all part of AGLOW. And that ties in media guys, tourism destinations, and brands. So like St. Croix Rods sponsored the trip. Niagara Falls Tourism invite us in and put us up. And then they brought guys like us to go out there, and we created a video for our YouTube channel, Fish Hunt Forever. So St. Croix Rods got exposure of us using these St. Croix Rods to catch these fish. And then we showcased Niagara River, which was a world-class fishing destination in itself. And then every year they have an annual conference somewhere. And this year it's in Minnesota. Last year it was in Branson, Missouri. The year before it was in Gaylord, Michigan. So we're going to go from Saskatchewan straight to the conference in Bemidji. And then after that, we'll go to Northwest Minnesota, where there's a small population of elk. And okay. Minnesota gave out 17 tags this year. So there were 17 once-in-a-lifetime tags for Minnesota hunters this year. And we've been trying to film somebody hunting elk in Minnesota for a number of years for Prairie Sportsman. And this year we tracked down a guy that drew a tag. And his season literally starts the day after the conference ends. So we're going to go from Saskatchewan to the Aglow Conference to elk hunting with me and Dan and two dogs driving all over the place before we come back home. So we got a lot going on.
Are both of you guys single?
Oh, yeah.
There's no way. I mean, we say we're from Minnesota, but we're really just from the highway.
Yeah.
And it's fun, though. You know, like you get that question a lot, but it's, you know, I'm obviously much younger than Brett, and I'm glad I get to do this what's 25 years? I just want to throw it out there to make you feel old, but you know, yeah, you're welcome. But yeah, it's pros and cons to everything, but I'm glad I get to do this while I'm young and see all these cool places. It's things aren't perfect. There's a lot on the backside that people who don't get to do this don't see, and they think we're just on a boat every day and catching fish every day. There's a lot more to it than that. It's not all roses and sunshine, but
there's no roses.
Well, it depends where you go. I mean, I've seen a rose.
Well, I've done this podcast from the front seat of a pickup barreling across a cornfield to a decoy spread. I've done it in hotel rooms a lot of times. We did it in the boat at Tazen this year. We recorded the video podcast in the boat at Tazen Lake this year. So
we've caught muskies on the podcast.
There you go.
it's fun.
No, I think, like you said, it's all pros and cons. And if that's what you like and that's what makes you happy, then I think that's really all that matters. Like you said in the first episode, you'd rather be poor. I think that's how you said it.
That's why it said a Nipwin. So
exactly. And I think that's a big thing. But that is a lot of windshield time. But I'd rather be busy than when I'm working. I'd rather be busy, have something to do, pass the time, right, and enjoy it than kind of sitting there doing nothing. And it's like you talked about, lots of people think it's kind of all sunshine and rainbows maybe with your job, and they don't see the other side. Like, lots of people think that with being a fishing guy too. And it's like, last year I didn't fish once after a client showed up. I didn't fish until I think the night I left. it's different, right? But still love it. Wouldn't trade it for anything, right? Like, I still enjoy other parts of it, but they think, oh, fishing guide, you get a fish all the time. It's like, no, things change. But that's for any of that stuff, right?
Absolutely.
And it kind of goes back to your question of asking if we're single or not. And I mean, that is something that we miss out on, is, you know, having some sort of relationship or a family or something like that, you know, or having kids would be a lot harder to do this job. And, you know, if that were to happen, then our trips would just probably go a little bit shorter. We need to find wives that can edit videos, Dan.
Yeah, do you have any female listeners? I already offended Luke Bryan, but...
Yeah. Well, Luke Bryan's not going to be helping you out anyways.
No, but I don't want to offend any of your other listeners if you have any female listeners.
Well, let's see if this shows
or
here.
Or viewers.
Audience here. Age. There's lots of... majority are in that 23 to 45.
Perfect.
5% are female, so...
Well... There's a few fish in the sea.
There's a few. Now, ones that could edit, I don't know. I don't know what that percentage is. But,
get a hold of us if they're out there.
Yeah. Well, you guys. Below. Yeah. Yeah. You guys got dogs anyways. Those are the most loyal things you could ask for. Yeah. So, there you go.
They can't edit, though.
No, they can't.
No thumbs.
Yeah. They do make good content, though. Like, I know this is going way back when we were talking about kind of the dopamine of YouTube and stuff like that. But we were just... when shorts kind of became a thing on YouTube, is like, you put anything up and it seemed to do good. And we had a snow goose and duck hunt where we got a limited ducks and quite a few, like 20 snow geese or something like that. And I had a GoPro on my head, terrible video, GoPro on my head, lay in there, pop up, shoot them. And I just broke down each flyover into shorts. And we went from like 80 subscribers to 4,000 just off shorts. And I'm like, okay, we have those. Like, some of them are kind of cool videos, right? But like you said, you can only watch a bird die so many times. And then I just started putting out some of these shorts that are good information and stuff like that. And some of these shorts with the shooting and whatnot are blowing up, doing really good. The one that did the best was the dog carrying back a crane. So that kind of where the dog ties into that. But now I'm putting up these informative videos with good information from someone who's very knowledgeable, and it's like 200 to like 800 views on the shirt. And I'm like, obviously there's a difference here, but I can only put up so many videos. I can only break down so many of those and not have it just be like, okay, we're getting unhelpful numbers here too. So yeah, I totally feel you there. But that's where the dog comes in. Dog did the best. Like 6 million views of a dog carrying a crane. I'm like, we're getting a lot of people that don't like us right now saying that God's going to strike down on us for shooting these birds. But
social media is weird sometimes, man, trying to crack that code. It's like, we went to Alaska and I had my big Canon with an underwater housing, which cost almost as much as the camera did. And I'm taking these underwater pictures of Dan walking through, and Sitka was kind of a sponsor. So we had the Sitka waders on. So I'm doing all these really cool underwater shots of Dan walking through, setting a decoy spread in the ocean. Yeah. I put them on Facebook and people are like, oh man, that's pretty cool. Then I put a picture of my dog up, like, oh, more pictures of Tiny. Yes. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, you don't appreciate the sweats of my labor. Right?
Even in the fishing videos, like, we had Tiny in the last fishing video we put up, and I got compliments. Or I was like, I was just Snapchatting someone, and I happened to be on a frame of Tiny in the boat and sent a picture. And like, I already know that's going to be the best part of the video. We just hammered.
That's pretty
awesome.
I know, but we just hammered walleyes on LiveScope, like cool footage, and I just can't wait to see your dog sit in the boat.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever pays the bills, I guess.
That's what makes it fun, I guess. You never know what's going to pop off. But I guess just hit the 2-hour mark. Let's get into some rapid fire, and I'll let you guys go to bed.
Right.
It's been on the. Oh, you're probably going to go edit till about 2 a.m. or something like that, anyways. But
yeah.
So you guys didn't know about these before. I've got a couple here. Just got, I guess, first thoughts. They don't have to be like one word answers. We kind of did that before, but obviously it's a podcast. If you want to explain. But I guess for the first one here, how to make a bad day of filming.
How to make a bad day filming? Like,
yeah.
What makes
like if you're the person in front of the camera, and like you guys are the ones behind the camera in this situation, like how could someone make it a bad day for you of filming, or just in general, what's a bad day that you've had of filming?
Well, I was in front of the camera, and I had my shooter shooting an episode of Prairie Sportsman, and we were pheasant hunting, and it was a pretty wet year. And there was a runoff creek, basically. So it wasn't a really well-established creek, but it was just runoff from this hillside. And so it was real grown over, and you couldn't see it. And I was watching my dog hunt in front of me, and all of a sudden she just disappeared and then popped back up and shook all this water off. So I turned around to the camera guy, and I said, hey, man, just be careful. There's a creek we can't see. It kind of a hidden creek up here. We got to step across. So we walked up to it, stepped across, and I reached back to have him hand me the camera so he could step across. You know, like the old, you're crossing a fence or something, you hand somebody your gun, same kind of thing with an expensive video camera. Once you hand me the camera, you can cross. Well, as he was stepping towards it, he couldn't see the edge. He fell right into that creek. And I was wearing a GoPro on my head, and I had it in 240. So I was shooting it slow-mo. So I've got him falling into this creek in slow motion, and like the camera just rolling off his fingertips and falling into this creek. So he had a walk around in pheasant. It was probably in the 50s here. So let's see, what would that be? 12, I suppose, for you guys.
Okay.
So, cold I enough. Mean, it wasn't cold, but it was cool, and he was soaking wet, and the day had just started.
Oh yeah.
And so we had like 8 hours of filming to go, and he was filming with a cell phone and soaking wet for about 8 hours. So that was kind of a rough day for him, but it gave us a good story anyway.
Yeah. Oh, that's fair. You have anything to add to that, Dan?
Yep. 4 words. I didn't get that. If something cool happened, a fish jumps, or you get a cool pheasant to flush, whatever, and you didn't hit the record button hard enough or whatever, you didn't get it.
Yeah. But I got to go for that. I've told it a couple episodes ago, but biggest pike of the season that I've ever guided was 46, I think, something like that. And I had let the one guy, this guest, I didn't let it. When it got into the net, it flipped around. It made a hole in the net. A 42 got out earlier in the day. pristine, nice looking fish would have been great for a picture. It got out. Luckily he caught some other big fish, but sucks, right? You want to get a picture with that. It got out, tried to get it back, couldn't. Anyways, we go later on that day, literally just about to head home. He catches this 46. I snap some pictures, but my hands are kind of slimy, wet or whatever, right? I know I took the pictures and release it, let it go. He goes, looks through his phone and I'm bending down and he goes, there's no pictures. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, it didn't take any pictures. And I knew that I had got a little slime on there. So on the iPhones and you hold it, right? I think now it maybe takes a video actually, or burst. And so I'd seen that once, but then I knew I'd taken pictures. I was like, what do you mean? And I'm already trying to figure out how are we going to fix this? And he's looking around, all the other guys laughing because he's pulling my leg. Yeah, I did get the pictures. And he's like, that's for losing my 42. So when you talk about I didn't get that, I felt that and my heart just sank. I was like, no.
It's a sick, sick feeling.
Well, if you do any filming, you will miss stuff. Yeah. And we've all done it. We've all missed the big moment. And Jim Shockey, I've quoted Jim a couple of times, but he said at the job of an outdoor camera guy is one of the hardest jobs in the world, especially if you're shooting big game. Mm-hmm. You got one tag and it's the biggest deer in the woods comes walking by and the guy shoots it and you don't get it on camera. You're looking for a new line of work.
Yeah, that's an issue. I guess for our next one, onto the good side of things, what is your guys' dream shot or video that you could get? Fishing or hunting, doesn't matter.
I know one shot I've been trying to get for a number of years, and I'd seen, I think Scott Lake had an image, and then maybe Arctic Lodges, I think, had an image of Northern Lights over the lodge. And I've always wanted to do that at Tazen. And normally when I'm there, it's earlier in the year, summer solstice time. There's no Northern Lights. Well, this year we were up there in August and Dan and I finally one night got some pretty cool images of Northern Lights over the lodge. And they're pretty good. I'm always hoping for better, but that was, I'm not gonna say that was a dream shot, but that's one I've been trying to get for about 7 or 8 years up at Tazen. And we finally got it up there this year. I know the last part I'll say is I remember going to Tobin one year in September for a waterfowl hunt. And I was just jacked because I was going to be up there for 10 days in September. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get so many Northern Lights pictures. And I stopped in PA at Trevor's house. And it was one of the wildest Northern Lights shows I've ever seen. And I did take a couple of pictures and they were everywhere in all different colors. And so when I got to Tobin, just excited about it, it was cloudy every single night for 10 straight days. Didn't get any photos up there. So,
yeah, that's how they work sometimes. Mm-hmm. We do see them every once in a while down here and just randomly. But yeah, definitely getting to that fall. I know that's a huge part of territory's tourism. Actually, is their biggest is, I think it's Asian tourists coming over and it filled the hotels. They just want Northern Lights. So, and this is actually this year, last year, this year, and maybe next year are supposed to be some of the best because I guess they go in a cycle a bit and they're saying it's supposed to be some of the best. So could get some better ones too.
Well, we're going back up. So
there you go.
This was, that was the shot this year. One of the still shots. So it was kind of cool.
Oh yeah. That's pretty sweet.
But
nice big, really shows up good too, yeah.
How about you, Dan? Oh, well, if you'd asked me this before December, I would have said duck hunting in Alaska, sea duck hunting in Alaska, but we went and did that, so I guess that can't be my answer. it'd have to be something, because the fishing world has really kind of taken everything over. It'd have to be either getting, like, the fish were, granted, we go by the length and weight or the length and girth weight conversion for Lakers at Tazen. So maybe either be filming like something that would break that world record lake trout mark, like it hit the 72 or 73 mark or something wild, like a Xander. You know, there's Xander in North Dakota. We're not very far from North Dakota. So going and catching a Xander, filming Xander over there, something weird like that would have to be climbing up those ranks or waterfowl across the world, you know, like an Argentina duck hunt would be cool. That's always going to be something cool to film. Those birds are just so pretty. And I know you've gotten to do that a little bit, but
and I'm trying to get us back down
there. Yeah. But something like that. But yeah, I would have told you Alaska, but now we did that. So
that's a good problem to have.
It is.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe go back to Alaska part two would be a dream, but
they stalked those Xander. I was just reading about that a couple months ago. They stalked those in like the 80s or something like that. 90s.
Yeah, long time ago. And it was kind of a secret for a while. And people still don't like it when you announce what lake it is because it's a limited supply of them. But everybody up there for sure knows.
Okay, cool. So I got two left here. These ones we always ask. I don't know if this one is as much of a debate for you guys down south, but up here we always got to ask: is it walleye or is it pickerel?
Walleye,
for you guys.
Oh, walleye.
Okay. Does anyone say pickerel down there?
No, other than chain pickerel? Honestly, I think when people talk about pickerel down here, they're a little more talking about pike.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So. Okay. It's,
or jacks.
Jacks.
Yeah. Which we don't use that jack down here either.
Yeah, no, that's the one that we get lots of. It's more, I don't know, it seems to be more of that like 45, 50 plus, like to say pickerel a lot.
Sure. Yeah.
And then everyone else is like, they're not pickerel, they're walleye. And usually it's usually a hard line. It's either it's walleye or a pickerel. It's never really in between for people. But I grew up lots of people calling them that. But yeah, for me, same thing, walleye. And I guess this one, I don't even know why I ask it all the time, but I'm always interested in it because I just, when I go out hunting or fishing, I usually end up starving myself. I just don't eat, forget to bring food. So for you guys, as far as filming, fishing, hunting, whatever, best snack that you can bring for those adventures.
Yeah, I'll leave Dan to answer this one because I don't bring a lot of food when I hunt and fish either.
Okay.
I've gotten good at this. Thermos of coffee always if you're out in the mornings. And now in my boat, there's always a box of fruit snacks and typically a box of honey buns. If we're hunting and it's cold, brown sugar Pop-Tarts on the Buddy Heater are top notch.
There you go.
Absolutely top notch.
Sounds like a good guy to bring along.
He's got well, I don't snacks. Share. Oh, okay. I don't share.
that's really the important part. No, yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Breakfast sandwich, like a ham, egg, and cheese at the gas station. That's usually what I eat before we go, and then I usually don't eat till we're done. Yeah. Then it's usually a beer.
Beer.
Yeah. Beer. Yeah. Yeah. I could have a beer breakfast, too, going up. Never know.
I guess the dogs agree.
Yeah, they agree. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Well, I guess as far as wrapping things up, where can everyone find you guys? On social, stuff like that. Plug away.
Sure. Well, I'll let Dan run through the big list, but what I always tell people is go to brettamundson.com, and that will get you links.
Dan's going
to
deal with the dogs. Yeah,
Dan, go deal with those dogs. Brettamundson.com, and that's with one T, so brettamundson.com. We'll get you links to everything that we do, and usually I post on the homepage the latest videos that we've created. So if you want to see just like the latest work, I usually have it updated right there on the homepage. But we've got Sporting Journal Radio, we've got the Fish Hunt Forever YouTube, Prairie Sportsman, and TazenLake.com for Tazen. And then a lot of the social channels between Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Dan's on TikTok because he's a 13-year-old girl.
Hey, TikTok is the news. I hated TikTok with a passion. Yeah. I was like, you know what? I could upload some stuff here. And now I spent too much time on it. It's just mind-numbing.
Well, once Instagram had Reels, I was like, I don't need to give China all my information anymore. So I get all the same content on Instagram anyway.
It's all TikToks on Instagram. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So make fun of it all you want, but I'll keep my views on TikTok. Good luck getting your views on Instagram.
I got a couple with over a million.
I know you do, and people should follow you because of that. But
yeah, for sure. How about you, Dan? Same thing.
Yeah, basically same stuff. Instagram's @Dan_Amundson. But yeah, everything's on Facebook. Sporting Journal Radio's on Facebook. Fish Hunt Forever, Instagram. And then YouTube, Tazen, Prairie Sportsman, Fish Hunt Forever, Sporting Journal Radio. Sporting Journal Radio, I'm sure you said this.
Yeah, but it's going to be a 3-hour podcast pretty soon.
Yeah,
Well, we just have so much stuff. Yeah. And you plugged the outdoor feed earlier, so go check the outdoor feed out too. If you just want general outdoor stuff, every day there's new stuff going up there. So check that out on Facebook and
LinkedIn.
All right. I'm on LinkedIn too.
But, I hate LinkedIn with a passion. I have a separate full-time job, and if you look at my LinkedIn, it is me with my profile picture and cover photo is me with fish. I'm pretty sure my job description is the podcast. I have nothing to do with my actual job, I don't think. Or if I do, it's just because. But yeah, no, I totally feel you there. And I could tell that you probably had a lot of different accounts because when I commented on the picture today, same thing happens to me. I have a part-time job with lots of different accounts. And you sometimes, like you liked it, I think, with the fish hunt
With a forever? Different account. Yeah.
With a different account. Yeah. And so that's, I know I was like, he's probably got quite a few accounts on the go here. So, yeah.
I think we're both maxed out on how many accounts we can be logged into on Instagram. Like, we can't log into anymore.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And we work like with Smith's Consumer Products. Like, we run all their social media. They have, you know, fillet knives and knife sharpeners and things like that. So we do all that. And
follow them too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we run a lot of accounts.
Okay. Cool. Well, like I said, now it's been 2.25 hours. So I appreciate you guys using up your whole night to come on here. It was a really good chat. I'm sure we'll have more of them in the future. But yeah, thanks for taking time of your day and coming on the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast.
Yeah, you bet, man.
Thanks for having
us. It was fun. I can talk about this stuff all day, and I love Saskatchewan. So anytime we can talk about Saskatchewan stuff too, I'm happy to do it. So thank you.
Sounds good. Well, hope you guys enjoyed that episode. That was awesome getting to sit down with those two. Like I said, this is kind of what happens when you get some guys together that love to just talk, whether it's the podcast or doing shows and stuff like that. We could kind of go on forever there, as I'm sure you could tell, but two great dudes talking to them. It's pretty sweet that they come up here and do lots with Saskatchewan stuff as well. So big thank you to them for coming on. I don't have too much here in the outro. Just want to say a big thanks again to our presenting sponsors, 13 Fishing. Go check out the website, shop all their brands, save 15% off with code Weekend Warriors. Get yourself ready for fall fishing, for early ice, because it's all coming up quick here. We hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Thank you for tuning into this one, and we'll see you in the next one.
Thanks for tuning in to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your favorite listening platform so we can reach more anglers just like you. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for media updates and behind-the-scenes content.